This morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 2, entitled Hiranyakashipu, King of the Demons, Text 47. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Yaval Linganvito Hyatma. Yaval Linganvito Hyatma. Yaval Linganvito Hyatma. Tavat Karma Nibandhanam. Tavat Karma Nibandhanam. Tavat karma nibandhanam. Tato viparyaya klesho. Tato viparyaya klesho. Tato viparyaya klesho. Maya yoga nuvartate. Maya yoga nuvartate. Yaval lingavito hyatma. Tavat karma nibandhanam. Tato viparyaya klesho. Maya yoga nuvartate. Yaval linganvito hyatma. Tavat karma nibandhanam. Tato viparyaya klesho. Maya yoga nuvartate. Yaval linganvito hyatma. Tavat karma nibandhanam. Tato viparyaya klesho. Maya yoga nuvartate. Tavat karma nibandhanam. Tato viparyaya klesho. Maya yoga nuvartate. Yaval linganvito yatma. Tavat karma nibandhanam. Tato viparyaya klesho. Maya yoga nuvartate. Madhujis. Yaval linganvito hyatma. Tavat karma nibandhanam. Tato viparyaya klesho. Maya yoga nuvartate. Yavan linganvito hyatma. Tavat karma nibandhanam. Tato viparyaya klesho. Maya yoga nuvartate. Yavat, as long as linga anvitaha, covered by the subtle body, he indeed atma, the soul, tavat, that long karma of fruitive activities, nibandhanam bondage, tataha from that, viparyayaha reversal, wrongly thinking the body to be the self, kleshaha misery, maya yogaha a strong relationship with the external illusory energy. Anuvartate follows. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. As long as the spirit soul is covered by the subtle body, consisting of the mind, intelligence, and false ego, he is bound to the results of his fruitive activities. Because of this covering, the spirit soul is connected with the material energy and must accordingly suffer material conditions and reversals continually, life after life. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The living entity is bound by the subtle body, consisting of the mind, intelligence, and false ego. At the time of death, therefore, the position of the mind becomes the cause for the next body. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 8.6, Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam yajatyante kalevaram. At the time of death, the mind sets the criteria for the spirit souls being carried to another type of body. If a living being resists the dictation of the mind and engages the mind in the loving service of the Lord, the mind cannot degrade him. The duty of all human beings, therefore, is to keep the mind always engaged at the lotus feet of the Lord. Savai mana krishna padaravindaya. When the mind is engaged at the lotus feet of Krishna, the intelligence is purified. And then the intelligence gets inspiration from the supersoul. Tadami buddhi yogam tam. Thus the living entity makes progress toward liberation from material bondage. The individual living soul is subject to the laws of fruitive activity, but the supersoul, Paramatma, is not affected by the fruitive activities of the individual soul. As confirmed in the Vedic Upanishad, the Paramatma and the Jivatma, who are likened to two birds, are sitting in the body. The Jivatma is enjoying or suffering by eating the fruits of the bodily activities. But the Paramatma, who is free from such bondage, witnesses and sanctions the activities of the individual soul as the individual soul desires.
Yalvallingan vidohyatma tavat karma nibandhanam tada viparyayah klesho maya yoga nuvartate.
As long as the spirit soul is covered by the subtle body, consisting of the mind, intelligence, and false ego, he is bound to the results of his fruitive activities. Because of this covering, the spirit soul is connected with material energy and must accordingly suffer material conditions and reversals continually, life after life. This is a continuation of Hiranyakashipu pacifying or attempting to pacify his relatives. Hiranyaksha has been killed by Lord Varaha, and Hiranyakashipu is very upset and angry. He's just sent all his demoniac followers to the earth planet to disrupt all pious activities, to destroy Vedic culture, in other words. And he is now trying to give solace to his grieving relatives, his nephews, the sons of Hiranyakashipu, his sister-in-law, his mother. And in doing this pacification, he is citing ancient history. This is all going on in Satya Yuga. And already he is able to quote a previous history of this Maharaj Suyagya, king of Ushinara, who was killed in the battlefield. So these particular verses are being recited by Yamaraj, who has come to counsel the grieving queens of King Suyagya. King Suyagya was killed in the battlefield, and his queens were lamenting over his dead body, so much so that they did not allow the body to be taken for cremation at the appropriate time. So therefore, Yamaraj, just to give spiritual knowledge to the queens, appeared in the form of a small boy and is speaking these very philosophical verses to the grieving queens. And Hiranyakashipu is relating that story because the situation is the same. His relatives are lamenting over the death of Hiranyaksha, just as the queens were lamenting over the death of their Lord Suyagya. So these verses are very basic philosophy of Krishna consciousness, very similar to verses in the Bhagavad Gita. When I first read this purport, it struck me how Srila Prabhupada in this purport is basically simply stringing together three verses that he quotes here. Yam yam vapi smaram bhavam, savayamana krishna padara vindayo, and desham satadiyukta anam. These three verses, two from Bhagavad Gita, one from Bhagavatam, basically are comprising the entire purport. So in the beginning of the purport, he talks about how the mind, the position of the mind becomes the cause for the next body. So we all know the verse, yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyajatyante kalevaram tam tam evaiti kaunteya sudatad bhava bhavita. Krishna is instructing Arjuna in the 8th chapter that whatever you think of at the time of death, that state, you will attain without fail. So, therefore, as Prabhupada continues, if one resists the dictation of the mind and engages it in the loving service of the Lord, then the mind cannot degrade him. Similarly, in the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is instructing Arjuna to withdraw the mind from the sense objects and to bring it back under control. Yato yato nischalati manas chanchalamastiram. Tatastato niyamyaitat atmaneva vashamnayet. Bring the mind back from wherever it wanders. Bring it back under the control of the higher intelligence. So that verse leads into how to engage the mind always at the lotus feet of the Lord. So this verse is referring to who? Savayamana Krishna Padara Vindayo. Who is spoken about in this verse? Anyone knows? Somebody? Savayamana Krishna, who does it refer to? Maharaj Ambarish. So Maharaj Ambarish is famous for the incident with Durvasa Muni, when Durvasa Muni was trying to destroy him for an apparent offense. But even more important, perhaps, in the life of Maharaj Ambarish is the series of verses, starting with Savayamana Krishna Padara Vindayo. So it's describing how Maharaj Ambarish engaged his mind fully in the lotus feet of the Lord, Krishna Padara Vinda. Krishna Padara Vindayo means the two lotus feet of Krishna. Sa Vai Mana. He engaged his mind in the two lotus feet of meditation on the two lotus feet of Krishna. Vacham Si Vaikuntha Gunanu Varnane is the next line. He engages his vacha, his speech, in glorifying the Lord of Vaikuntha. Sa Vai Mana Krishna Padara Vindayo. Vacham Si Vaikuntha Gunanu Varnane. Karau Harir Mandira Marjanadishu. Shrutim Chakarachyuta Satkatodaye. The third line is saying how he engages his hands in cleaning the temple of the Lord. And then he engages his ears in hearing the pastimes, hearing the activities of the Lord. And the two more verses after this that continue, how he engages all his other senses. He engages his sense of smell in smelling the tulsi offered to the lotus feet of the Lord. He engages his legs in walking towards the temple. He engages his head in bowing down in front of the deity. In this way, the three verses describe how Maharaj Ambarish fully engaged all his senses, mind, body, activities, possessions in the service of the lotus feet of the Lord. In the Nectar of Devotion, this is described a little bit more, how there are nine processes of bhakti, shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu, smaranam, padasevanam, and how there's a personality who perfected their Krishna consciousness through one of these processes. Just like we're hearing here in Srimad Bhagavatam, the conversation between Shukadeva and Parikshit Maharaj. And the first process is Shravanam. So by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, by the process of Shravanam, Maharaj Parikshit attained perfection. And Kirtanam, Shukadeva Goswami, by expounding Srimad Bhagavatam, by speaking Srimad Bhagavatam to Parikshit Maharaj, he attained perfection. So like that, there are nine devotees who attain perfection through each one of these processes, Pada Sevanam, Lakshmi Devi, Smaranam, Prahlad Maharaj, and it continues on. And Maharaj Ambarish is given as the example for one who has engaged all his senses and all the various angas of bhakti fully. Not one in particular, but all of them. And Prabhupada comments that One can attain perfection either by engaging in one process of devotional service, as many great Vaishnavas did, or by engaging in all of them, and the result is the same. But Maharaj Ambarish has some special position because of his example in how to engage every sense, every subtle sense, every possession in the service of the Lord. So that's the central part of the purport, how to engage the mind at the lotus feet of the Lord. And then Prabhupada goes on to talk about when one does that, then one gets inspiration from the Supersoul. So this is again going back to Bhagavad Gita, 10th chapter this time. And Prabhupada quotes the third line, Tadami Buddhi Yogam Tam. So this is also a very famous verse from Bhagavad Gita. Tesham Satata Yuktanam Bhajatam Priti Purvakam Tadami Buddhi Yogam Tam Yenamam Upayantite. One of the four seed verses of Bhagavad Gita. That one who engages one's mind to those who are constantly engaged, Satata Yuktanam, is constantly. In worshipping the Lord with love, priti, to such people, Tadami Buddhi Yogatam, Krishna says he gives them in the intelligence how to attain him. So then the purport concludes by the example of the two birds. And this also is a verse from, Prabhupada says, the Vedic Upanishad, Mundaka Upanishad, and it's actually quoted in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita in the purport by Srila Prabhupada. Samani Vrikshe Purusho Nimagno. The two birds are living together in the same tree, but one bird is busy tasting the fruits, sour fruits, sweet fruits perhaps, while the other bird is simply observing. So this is compared to the soul and the supersoul, the Jivatma or the Paramatma. So the Jivatma is engaged in the material world, suffering, enjoying, trying to adjust his position, going from body to body. And the Paramatma is simply observing and trying to remind him to turn his face back towards him, to turn his face towards the Lord. So like that, the entire purport, and it's like this with many of Srila Prabhupada's purports, and they're simply faithfully repeating the words of the previous acharyas. Of course, you know, mostly Srila Prabhupada's purports were compiled from the commentaries of the acharyas. If you go to Srila Prabhupada's rooms upstairs in the Lotus Building, you can see these very large volumes of commentaries by the acharyas on the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Prabhupada would, when he would translate the Bhagavatam, he wasn't simply making the purports himself. He was translating the Sanskrit verses, and he was also translating the commentaries of the acharyas. And that is what generally makes up his purports. So this is the parampara. Many times Prabhupada would comment that his one success, or the reason for his success, was that he faithfully repeated the words of his spiritual master. So we can see that here in this purport, that he's faithfully repeating the words of the Shastras, the verses from Bhagavatam, verses from Bhagavad Gita. And you know, that is the one of the major qualifications of an acharya, is that he is always a humble disciple of his own spiritual master and faithfully repeats the message without interpretation or speculation. And it's also interesting to note that even in the verse itself, is also very similar to some verses from Bhagavad Gita, how the living entity is driven from body to body. Now, this entire section is very similar to parts of the Bhagavad Gita, how one has to suffer material conditions and reversals, life after life, how the body, how the mind carries the body, carries the soul from one body to another. In the 15th chapter, there's a description, Shariram yadavapnoti yachap vrityamatishvaraha grihitvaitani samyata vayurgandhanivashayat. So just like you hear, you smell different aromas through the air, through the medium of the air. The aroma is very scent, very subtle element. We can't see it, but we can experience it through the air, different smells, good or bad. So like that, the mind carries the soul to different bodies. The mentality of the jiva in one life will carry over into the next life, and he'll take up an according, befitting position. And the next verse, he says how he'll be given a certain type of body, a certain type of senses, shrotram, chakshu, sparsham, cha, rasanam, pranam, eva cha. These different senses, the five senses which are grouped around the mind, they'll be given according to one's consciousness. And therefore, the elevation of consciousness is such an important aspect in this section, how to engage the mind in service of the Lord. Whereas the mind is engaged in the modes of passion, modes of ignorance, one will be accordingly given a body in his next life. So like that, these are universal truths. Here, as I mentioned, this is Satya Yuga, and this knowledge was very much prominent then. And in Bhagavad Gita, the same knowledge was given to us from Krishna to Arjuna in the Dwapara Yuga. And Srila Prabhupada is repeating the same knowledge here to us today through his books and his instructions. So that's one point that I wanted to cover in this class, the principle of faithfully adhering to the parampara and repeating what one has heard from the spiritual master and from the acharyas. And second part, I would like to talk a little bit about this situation here where the queens are lamenting over the dead body of Suyakya, and simultaneously Hiranyakashipu's relatives are lamenting over the death of Hiranyaksha. So in a few verses, actually Prabhupada mentions this phenomenon of smashana vairagya. So smashana means crematorium, the place where the body is burnt. If you go to Navadvip, there's a crematorium. And when devotees pass away here in Mayapur, then also we take their body to the bank of Ganga, burn the dead body. So this is called a smashana. Smashana is the crematorium. So smashana vairagya is the feeling when someone very close to you dies and you're attending their funeral and lamenting their departure, then some feelings of detachment may arise, generally arise, even in mudas and karmis. You know, if their very close relative, father or husband or, you know, son dies, then people start to wonder, what is the meaning of life? You know, what is the point of existence? We're doing so much and the body is just going to be finished today or tomorrow. Is there anything more than this? So there are certain sentiments may arise in the lamenting party. And this is called the renunciation at the crematorium. Oh, you know, these things are all useless, material opulence, material engagements have no value, everything will be finished at death. And the Prabhupada goes on to say that generally this sentiment doesn't last very long. And once one leaves the crematorium, once the funeral is over, there may be a mourning period that is over, then people go back to their mundane existence once again. But there is a chance at that time that they can be awakened to spiritual knowledge. Just like here, Hiranyakashipu is trying to get his relatives over their lamentation. Of course, his motivation is a little different. Now, his motivation is not that they should understand spiritual knowledge for the sake of it and they should, you know, take up Krishna consciousness. Not at all. In the next chapter, we're going to see, you know, his plans unfolding, how he's going to perform austerities and how he has a great plan to kill Vishnu. So his purpose in all these instructions is not actually spiritual. He just wants everyone to calm down so he can get on with his business of killing Vishnu, his so-called futile attempt. But otherwise, generally in Smashan Vairagya, there is an opportunity in this when people are lamenting and thinking about life and death and what is the purpose of everything, we could give some opportunity to hear the spiritual knowledge, then people may actually take it up, having being in that condition of lamentation. But generally what happens, people may be a little philosophical for a few days, then they go back to their life, routine life, and they forget. You know, they say, oh, we just have to get on with life, we have to carry on as we were doing. So-and-so wouldn't want us to, the person who's passed away, they wouldn't want us to lament or to give up everything. So they go back to material life. Still, we can take advantage of this. Even in, many devotees, when their relatives pass away, they go to the funeral. I had the same experience also. My grandfather passed away a couple of years ago, and I was able to give some Krishna consciousness a little bit, you know, to the people who attended the funeral. So this is called smashana vairagya. And there are also several other kinds of vairagya. which we will discuss a little bit today. Another kind of vairagya is markata vairagya and phalugu vairagya, yukta vairagya. So these four vairagyas that Prabhupada talks about, smashana vairagya, which we've covered already, markata vairagya, phalugu vairagya, and yukta vairagya. So markata vairagya, this is an interesting concept, and Prabhupada speaks about it quite a lot, and also Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur has quoted this. And in fact, even Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has twice spoken about markata vairagya. Once he spoke about markata vairagya to Raghunath Das Goswami. When Raghunath Das Goswami wanted to renounce and join the Lord, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him, don't be a markata vairagi. So markata means monkey, or also means restless. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur has translated as restlessness. So this refers to the monkeys in the forest, or say monkeys in Vrindavan. They look very renounced. No clothes, let's eat some fruits, whatever they can find here and there. And they seem very renounced, just like sadhus living in the jungle. You know, they live, maybe they just wear a kopan, they live off whatever they can find in the forest, very renounced. But at the same time, these monkeys are not very renounced. They're keeping, Prabhupada says, sometimes 24 or 36 or 12 female monkeys for enjoyment. So on one hand they appear very renounced, but actually they're not. They're indulging in all sorts of mischievous activities. So the markata vairagi is somebody who may appear to be renounced, but actually is secretly indulging in all sorts of abominable activities. And oftentimes, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Srila Prabhupada would use this example to refer to the Babajis in Vrindavan, who on one hand appear to be very renounced, but actually many of them are indulging in sinful activities, even in the Holy Dham. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Raghunath Das Goswami, don't be restless, just stay at home, perform your duties. He was a married man, Raghunath Das Goswami, at that time. Perform your duties, but just don't be attached. And when the time comes, then you'll be able to renounce. So we know how later on Raghunath Das Goswami did leave home and fled to Puri, where he was reunited with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at the appropriate time. And the second instance when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu talks about markata vairagi is in the story of Chota Haridas. So Chota Haridas was a person in the renounced order, but he had some attachment to talking to women or some attraction. And therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected him from his association. And the other devotees weren't able to understand why suddenly Mahaprabhu has rejected Chota Haridas, because it wasn't very apparent what he had done. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had to explain that he's a markata vairagi, that he's supposed to be renounced, but he is indulging in inappropriate activity for someone in the renounced order. So this also brings out the point how whatever one's ashram of life one is in, whether it's brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, one should be faithful to that ashram. So three ashrams are renounced, and only the grihastha ashram, there is a concession for regulated association between husband and wife, between man and woman. Whereas Chota Haridas, being in the renounced state, his association with a woman was condemned by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he was rejected by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this is markata vairagya. And then there's phalgu vairagya. So there's actually a river called Phalgu at Gaya. Gaya is the place where in India traditionally people go to perform pinda when the father passes away, and Lord Chaitanya himself did that. So there's a dry riverbed. It looks like a dry river, there's no water. But just under the surface, under the sand, the water is flowing. So this phalgu vairagya means someone who is externally detached, but he still has the desires for sense gratification. He's not fully purified from the desire to enjoy his senses. So there's maybe a subtle distinction between the markata vairagya, the phalgu vairagya. The markata vairagya, they appear renounced, but they actually secretly indulge. Whereas phalgu vairagya, they are renounced, but they're not purified from the tendency to enjoy. And Prabhupada often will talk about the mayavadis who appear very renounced, and you know, they reject the world, Brahman satya, jagat mithya, the world is false, it should be rejected, very austere, very renounced, sense controlled. But because they don't have complete knowledge of the Lord, therefore their renunciation is incomplete. Phalgu vairagya. And therefore, many times, the great Mahivadi sannyasis, they start to engage in mundane activities or charitable activities such as opening hospitals, running schools, and such things. And Prabhupada would often comment on that. That on one hand, they're supposed to be renounced, but they don't know what real renunciation is, and therefore they engage in mundane welfare activities. So that brings us to the Yukta Vairagya, which means how to engage everything in the service of the Lord. And it's quite interesting to note that Rupa Goswami has given definition of both of these, Falgu Vairagya and Yukta Vairagya, in Nectar of Devotion. Nasaktasya Vishayan Yatarham Upayunjata Nirbandha Krishna Sambande Yukta Vairagya Muchyate. So this is the definition of Yukta Vairagya. And the definition of Falgu Vairagya is Prapanchakitaya Buddhya Hari Sambandhi Vasuna Mumukshubhi Parityakyo Vairagyam Falgu Katyate. And these two verses, this morning I went to confirm, these two verses are just outside our main gate. If you go to the main gate next to the pharmacy, of course nowadays the main gate is not as main as it used to be. Before, that was the main gate to enter the campus. Now there's Gada Bhavan, there's, you know, so many entrances. But that was the main gate, and still called the main gate. So if you go out and look inside from the road, you'll see two Bengali verses on either side of the gate. So these are the two verses. The Sanskrit verses, they're written in Bengali, describing the Falgu Vairagya and Yukta Vairagya. And along with the verses, there's the logo of the Gaudiya Math, designed by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. There are, I think, six different items in a circle with a design. And this was personally designed by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And three of the items show the Pancharatrika mark, and three of the items show Bhagavat mark. And the verses are inscribed underneath the logo. So you can go have a look. I actually went very early this morning to confirm that they were there still. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is really the acharya in our line who took these two verses and applied them very practically. So although the verses are written by Rupa Goswami, we can see the Goswamis, they maintained a very renounced lifestyle. And Prabhupada talks about this in a lecture here in Mayapur, in, I think it was 74, how the Goswamis, they lived under a tree every night, a different tree. And Sanatana Goswami, he was keeping his deity of Mother Mohan just hanging in a bag on the branches of a tree. And so when he was approached by some wealthy merchant, you know, what service can I do for you, Sanatana? So Sanatana Goswami said, you can build a temple for my Mother Mohan, because he's just living with me, not very nice condition. But Sanatana Goswami for himself was quite happy to live under the tree. So the Goswamis were living a very renounced life. Now, they didn't big temples so they could have a nice room and comfortably, you know, live there. Similarly, Srila Prabhupada said, for myself, this bhajan kutir, the grass hut, that is enough. But if I just live here in a grass hut, then nobody will come. For Radha Madhava's worship, to attract people, we need a gorgeous temple, and therefore so much construction was and still is going on in Mayapur. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he took this verse, Yukta Vairagya, and really brought it into the field of reality, where he started to use everything in the service of preaching Krishna consciousness. Temples, printing press, you know, vehicles, trains, cars. Previously sadhus would not use any conveyance, they would walk. But he started using cars, he started using trains. The printing press was a very important aspect of his preaching. The Brihat Mridanga, printing books, printing the commentaries of the acharyas, distributing books. And actually, if you look at the logo, all the items on the logo are, you know, there's a Bhagavatam, there are deities, there's a Pancharatra, there's Mridanga. But one item there which stands out is the printing press. It's actually embedded in his logo next to the Mridanga. So there's the Kirtan, Harinam Sankirtan with the Mridanga and Kartas, and there's the Brihat Mridanga printing press that produces Krishna conscious literature that can be spread all over the world. So that printing press is actually there in the logo of the Gaudiya Math that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur created. So, you know, and dressing in Western clothes, preaching in English, all these things were first started by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and taken up by Srila Prabhupada. You know, he followed the footsteps of his spiritual master and engaged everything in the service of the Lord. At the same time, the trick to this is the first line of the verse is anasaktasya, means without being attached. Asakti is attachment. So anasakti is without attachment. If one gets attached to all these different things, which we are so-called using in the Lord's service, but actually we're attached to using them for ourselves, then that's not actual real yukta vairagya. We can use anything in the service of the Lord, but our attachment should be only for using it in the Lord's service, not for using it in our own service. So otherwise, then we're not actually doing yukta vairagya. We'll be entangled, we'll be starting to get attached to the things rather than to the service. So this is one of the dangers in engaging everything. If you're renouncing everything, you may be subtly attached. If you're engaging everything, you may still be subtly attached. So externally, it's hard to tell, you know, who is advanced, who is not advanced. It depends on one's internal absorption in Krishna and how one can engage everything. One's mind, one's body, one's possessions, everything in the service of the Lord. So that was Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's motto, to engage everything. You know, he sent devotees overseas to preach. Previously, sadhus who never crossed the ocean is considered inauspicious. But he saw the higher principle that Lord Chaitanya wanted message spread to every town and village. Therefore, one has to give up the lower principle of not crossing the ocean for the higher principle of preaching the message of the Lord. So like this, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and then Srila Prabhupada has given us the method how to engage everything in the Lord's service. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada also instructed us, you know, we should build this big temple, we should engage all different gadgets and technological advancement, different inventions. We use it all in the service of the Lord without attachment, and we can be fully situated in Yukta Vairagya. Since it's 8:45, we should stop unless anyone has anything to add or comment or question. Yes.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for the terminology you use. It's nice you're using all this wonderful terminology, Sanskrit terminology. Prabhu, if we look at the Srila Prabhupada's prophet, we see the whole point there is the free will. And this free will has been a kind of argument, a dialogue among some intellectual people that if actually God sees our free will, or God exists.
Sure, I really can't hear, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I think the mic is a bit muffled or something.
Maybe I bring it. So I'm saying that if you look at the purport critically, you can understand that the cause of one's revolving in the cycle of sanskara is as a result of free will. And we can also say from the purport, Upanishad is being given as two birds sitting on a tree, and one is struggling with the fruit of the tree while the other one is just watching. So some intellectuals have had some discussion, they have had some dialogue, they have had some argument that if God is all omniscient, omnipotent, omniscience, who sees everything, why does he allow the jiva to struggle without interfering? Without even rescuing the jiva, until the jiva had to realize that there is a big mistake, I'm into a big mess or something like that. So, your contribution.
Okay, I think I got most of that. Basically, it comes down to the free will, the discussion about free will, and why does the Lord not bring us back to Him, right? More or less. So free will. It's interesting. It's a big discussion, but the Paramatma, he is witnessing. Here it says witnessing and sanctioning the activities of the individual soul. So he wants that we should come on our own, with our own realization, we should turn towards him. And he is sending reminders. The Lord is always sending reminders, especially in the human form of life. Just that we have the human form of life, we have the ability to understand God. And it says that, he sends the spiritual master, he sends the Shastra, he sends the Vaishnavas. So there are so many reminders that the Lord is giving us all the time, especially those of us who are, coming in touch with Krishna consciousness. But it's up to the jiva to take advantage of that. And sometimes even after taking advantage of that, you know, people go away, they fall down, they get sucked back into the material world. So it's really a question of, you know, engaging one's mind and coming to a firm decision that, you know, I've suffered in the material world for so many lifetimes. Prabhupada would say, just give this one lifetime to Krishna. You've been, you know, up and down in the material world, in the wheel of samsara for so many lifetimes. Just give this one lifetime to Krishna. Then see the result. So like that, the Lord does give reminders, but He doesn't want to interfere with the independence of the jiva. Let the jiva come to the realization on his own. The Lord is giving reminders. He's always there to accept our service whenever we turn towards Him. And once we do that with our full heart, then that reciprocal relationship can blossom. You know, He's not going to force anything. He wants our voluntary service, our voluntary love. So maybe in a nutshell, that's how I'd respond to your question. Anything else? Yes.
Hi Krishna, thank you so much for your class. I just wanted to ask, in terms of also applying the proper Yukta Vairagya, how to differentiate between being inspired by Krishna, the Dhamma Buddhi, Yogam, and from the mind, Manorathena, because mind can also quote Shastras, it can also convince you this is for Krishna, this is for Guru, this is for greater good, so please comment.
Yeah, so there are different ways to get direction. Therefore we have Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, and they should all be in agreement in an ideal situation. We're not sure what to do, we have some personal issue, then we consult the spiritual master, take guidance from the scriptures, and we take advice from our friends, seniors. So in an ideal situation, all of them would give similar advice because they have our best welfare. They have our welfare at heart. So they would want us to do whatever is best for our Krishna consciousness. And whereas if we're depending on the mind or depending on our own strength, you know, then there's the risk that we may be listening to the mind who may be trying to trick us into doing something which may appear to be, you know, the best thing, but it may not necessarily be the best thing. Whereas Guru, Sadhu, Shastra, they will always have the ultimate goal in mind, the long-term benefit, Krishna consciousness, whereas the mind might be trying to avoid something and say, oh, you don't need to do that because of this, because of this. Therefore, we have to always take guidance from the Vaishnavas and the Shastras and the spiritual master, you know, to see, you know, is it just the pushing of the mind to do something which may not be the best thing, or is it actually is that inspiration confirmed? You know, inspiration coming from within, is it confirmed by Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, or is it, you know, maybe just mental concoction? So therefore, we have these different authorities we can consult. Anything else? Thank you. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Shri Prabhupada ki, Gaur Premanandi.